I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. On this week's episode, reporter Lindsay Boyle shares some behind-the-scenes details about our recent long-form project called Pathways, which looks at the various paths to legal immigration in the U.S. And reporters Martha Shanahan and Nate Lynch talk about Ledyard farmer and Aikido instructor Robert Burns, who recently died in a car crash. So, Lindsay, we've covered immigration topics over the years on an ongoing basis. Recently, you led a project looking specifically at the pathways to legal immigration in the United States. Can you tell us a little bit about the project, how it came about, and what data you looked at, the people you spoke to, et cetera?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, with the campaign and subsequent election of President Donald Trump, immigration as an issue kind of jumped back into the forefront. So as a newsroom, we've been discussing this for quite some time. And by this, I mean just what are some of the issues with immigration that we haven't tackled yet? What are some of the ways that we can write about this in a way that's local and meaningful? So the idea for my piece, which wasn't initially supposed to be a long-form piece, it was going to just be one story, but the idea was that maybe all of us, even here in the newsroom, don't really understand the immigration system as well as we might believe. So let's just do an explainer. Let's just go through and look and see what actually it entails. So that ends up not being one story. It ends up being very complicated.
What did we learn from your kind of investigation and reporting?
I was thinking about this conceptually and wondering how to tackle it. So I decided, hey, it'd be really cool to find some people who came here as immigrants, and by here I mean, you know, the southeastern Connecticut area, and just learn the different ways that they got here. And what I ended up with, you know, through working with a couple sources of mine, was a very wide array of people from you know, four different continents with four different pathways, and each of their pathways, you know, even if it's the same thing, like even if they came here for work, you could talk to five people who came here for work and they probably came in a different way. So what I just learned is that there's not a one size fits all. It's, you know, that flow chart keeps coming back to my mind.
The chart that you're talking about is this like huge, complex, really confusing chart that and some of our listeners probably have seen these flow charts in social media. So they'll ask a question. If yes, then it takes you in one route. If no, it takes you another route. And then it kind of spider webs from there. And this particular flow chart shows the various ways to gain legal immigration. And it's just, it was enormous. I mean, there's
A
hundred pathways, like different at least, tendrils,
at least you couldn't even count them all. Yeah. You know, there's a pathway for someone who has $500,000 who can reinvigorate a dying company.
Like, right.
There's a pathway for someone who's been here since 1972, but only 1972. Like, there are just all these weird exceptions.
And where they come from plays into it as well.
In terms of the wait time.
Yeah. And so we looked at data from the Department of Homeland Security, and as you mentioned, you talked to various individuals, and some of them got here as asylees, right?
Yes, yep.
And then another gentleman who came as a specialized worker, right, working for Pfizer, was that the gentleman?
Yeah, he did end up at Pfizer, yep.
And so we looked at the data, looking at those types of numbers, including how many, over the last 10 years, looking at the number of asylees allowed in the United States by year, the number of refugees allowed, and the number of legal residence that was granted to people. And we also looked at the wait times. You kind of mentioned that, that the Immigration Service publishes, showing you, depending on where you're from and when you started the process, how long it might take before your a visa number is even available for you to continue in the process, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting one there for me is the Philippines is singled out. And if you're the brother or sister of a Filipino native...
Legal resident.
Legal resident. You have to wait 17 to 23 years to even begin the process, if memory serves.
Right.
That's insane. The thing with a project like this is, it takes a long time. I think that people can look at it on the page and realize that it took a lot of effort, but it took a long time too. This is the longest I've ever spent on a single project in ever. I've never spent this long on a single project.
About how long did you do the reporting?
So my first interview was probably in March.
Okay.
And that's really, that's a long time for the newspaper world to be sitting on something and working on it. And my first interview was with the El Salvadoran. So that was it was difficult.
Who remained anonymous? Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, you and I have talked a little bit about that on the podcast, about why and what circumstances we kind of use anonymity.
Well, we set up the parameters going in. The very most, I would use a first name, and possibly I would use, no name, just because the nature of her story is that she had to flee a country where they had kidnapped her daughter. She got her daughter back, then they kidnapped and killed her husband,
In El Salvador, the gangs,
right.
The MS-13,
right.
Which is the main gang. And it's no small thing, because if you listen to the radio, the news right across the sound in Long Island, there's been a scary spike in murders that seem to be linked to MS-13.
Yeah.
Involving immigrants, so.
Yeah. So, for us to identify her, what we do is online, and online is international. So if we in some way gave the gangs a way to understand where she was, that would put her safety at risk, and we're never going to do something like that. So.
And what was her pathway?
Well, she is in the process of, which is an interesting animal right now, because there's such a backlog in these types of cases. But
asylum is what
she's going for. Asylum,
right.
And asylum is the definition is the same as becoming a refugee. Essentially, the difference is if you're a refugee, you apply for it while you're still in another country. If you're applying for asylum, you made it into the United States already. So she made it into Texas. And, she started going through this process immediately. She sat down with immigration officials. They're like, okay, yeah, you seem like you have a pretty reasonable case here. So I think that was November 2015. So you're looking at going on 2 years. She's still in the process. The last I heard from her, she's still waiting to be assigned a court case date. Mm. So she believes there will be three.
Okay.
But she hasn't even gotten to the first one yet.
And then there's a Peruvian gentleman who married, was she a U.S. citizen or a resident?
He married a U.S. citizen,
okay.
Yep.
And what was the basics of his story?
Basics of his story is his father got here first. He actually was kind of thriving in Peru. He wasn't really thrilled to leave. But respect for his father and other family members who also were here, his father summoned him and he came. So he came, I believe it was like 1998.
Wow, yeah.
And he met and fell in love with a U.S. citizen pretty quickly thereafter. And
right.
So he followed that path. And if you marry a U.S. citizen, you can apply for a visa immediately. So it doesn't mean you get the visa immediately,
right.
But you can begin the process right away.
Right.
There's no wait time. So
that's one of those quicker pathways.
Probably the fastest,
right.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating every time that you tackle a process or a project like this, just the variety of people that are in our area. So, from the gentleman from Rwanda, right? A lot of us have heard of the genocide in Rwanda. It was 1994. But many of us hear 1994 and don't realize, some people are still kind of unsettled because of that. You know, that widely dispersed a lot of people around the world. So, right. You know, guy from Rwanda has to spend most of his life in a Tanzania camp, which wasn't easy, but also the family wasn't allowed to leave, or Tanzanians would, they could kill you if you left the camp. So that he ends up here in Little New London is, it's kind of fascinating to me, you know. I think the story of the gentleman from India, right. He had this really short window of time to grab onto this opportunity that disappeared 2 years later.
Right.
You think about that. What if he waited? What if he hedged? What if he? There's so many what ifs in all of these stories. Like, all of them consist of, like, in that moment we took the opportunity.
Anything that surprised you about the process?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing is that it could have been. It could have just been that I ran the one story about all the pathways and then online, and then ran each of the next four stories the next 4 days, which is kind of how it ended up playing out in print. But I really wanted this to be a package that was available in one URL.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You go to this link and you can see all of these stories, because it just felt, it was too much for one story, obviously.
Right.
It was, you know, 4,500 words or something, right. Absurd like that, but it was still a cohesive piece. It still went together. So I really wanted to see that through. And you say something like that, it sounds easy, and it's never, ever, ever easy.
Right. If anybody works with content management systems and publishing online, they probably know how difficult it is to do anything that's outside of the box, outside of the, whatever template that you typically use. So we had to build a new template, we had to add different assets and different elements to the template. So that was kind of on the back end, working with Joe Ruggieri, our web developer, where we struggled the most. And again, up until the evening when we were publishing, we were still troubleshooting things. We published, and then, oh my God, it's not working the way it's supposed to work. And it turned out that we took down like a big chunk of servers on our on our service provider.
Yeah,
we broke
the internet for a minute.
Yeah, So for me, it's always, I enjoy these projects because it allows us to do, again, things that are outside of the daily production. And it also builds a framework for later on down the road. We can use this type of template to tell these types of stories down the road. So
I can't say enough about how difficult it can be to just track down sources for a story like this. So while I'm trying to write up their stories in a way that is meaningful, I'm also thinking in the back of my mind, like, what data graphic would look good with this story, you know?
Right.
How can we get a photo of this guy? So it's, you got to be like in a million different places while still working on other stories.
While working on the daily stuff, breaking news. Yeah. Again, thank you for your hard work. And hopefully, I know you want to take a break before you tackle another big project right. Like this, but I'm hoping that the newsroom will be able to do more of this throughout the year. And like I said, we now have kind of the experience of a couple of projects, and we have a template and a framework that we can work on. And for the size of a newsroom that we have one developer, we have one designer. You know, I think we try a lot of interesting things, and so hopefully people get something out of it.
I hope so too. Yeah, I've gotten pretty good feedback so far.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, it's a sacred mission. Not everybody can be a farmer. You have to have a passion and a desire. You have to love humanity. You have to love your brothers and sisters. So you stand between heaven and earth and you feed them. You give them what gives them life. It's very sacred to be a farmer.
Bob Burns was a person who, I think probably the best way to put it is that everybody had a different experience of meeting him or knowing him through the martial arts that he was involved with and through organic farming and anti-GMO activism. He died in a and crashed his car into a tree, according to the police, last Saturday. Was it on Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday
morning.
And I'm also a political activist. I enjoy politics. I would never run for office is because the strongest political force in our country is the people who are able to work with and guide our legislators.
When you were kind of doing the research for this article, you kind of dug up a lot of conflicts he had had with the town that seemed kind of... He hadn't been having so many conflicts in the town since I started reporting in Ledger, but it seems like he had several back in the day.
One of the current town councilors I spoke with said that after the solar panel discussion, which was sort of over whether he had violated zoning rules by installing these three solar panels on the farm, his solution to try to fix it after it had been going on for a while and it hadn't really been resolved, his solution was to put his name in to be the zoning, be on the zoning commission so that he could just solve the problem himself by like being on the zoning commission himself. And the town councilor sort of talked him out of it.
Well, before the chemical scum hit the planet in agriculture in the 1890s, Germany, the whole world was organic.
Another time that he was sort of in the news and in the public mm-hmm. eye was when he became aware that the Denison Pequot Nature Center, which is in Stonington, had accepted a grant from Monsanto. He sort of it launched this like more than a year long fight between him and the people at the Nature Center over whether they should have accepted this grant from Monsanto, which has a seed plant next to, or a research facility or something next to the Nature Center. Just adamant that they should not even accept the money. I think they made some sort of conciliatory changes to their policy about accepting grants.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, but they wouldn't give that back the money, and that wasn't enough for him.
Yeah.
That was one of the things where he was annoying a lot of people, and he was making a lot of people frustrated, and you know, maybe some people would say that he was taking it too far. And
right.
I think at some point he organized a protest outside of the Nature Center over the grant. But it was just what he believed in. And I think he had a lot of allies in the sort of anti-GMO, you know, community.
Teach Aikido. I'm a fifth dan, fifth degree black belt. I've been practicing since 1980. Excellent. Now, if I go to choke you, push me away.
I spoke to his daughter, who Kelly lives in Montana, and she told me that he graduated from Norwich Free Academy, and then joined the Marines shortly after he graduated high school. And then it sounds like he was honorably discharged from the Marines after an injury. I know the Norwich Bulletin did a sort of like meet a veteran piece on him where he told them these details. And then sort of spent the rest of his life before he moved back to Ledger living all over the place. He was apparently an actor in New York.
That's really interesting.
Wrangled wild horses and trained them. And he also, when he lived in California, and while he was there, he became really involved with Aikido, which is this martial art that he actually taught at the farm. He had a dojo at the farm. But it was when he was living in California that he got really into it, and he became like a teacher of that, and he got a job as a teaching at a Marine sort of outpost, teaching Marines Aikido. So really just a guy that had a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's parents in Ledger who all sent their kids to him to learn Aikido, and I think that was, you know, a really beneficial thing for a lot of the kids that he taught. So those people had a totally different understanding of what kind of person he was, and totally different relationship with him than, you know, for example, other, you know, various politicians in
yeah,
Ledger,
yeah,
and
exactly.
And you know, definitely like people that he maybe butted heads with over GMO stuff.
Is it cabbage here? Tomatoes? Squash? Squash, cucumbers? These are cutes. American slicing, cute.
What was he like when you went to the farm, or what?
I drove up to the driveway, and he was out with his son. I think it wasn't the one that was involved in the accident, but his younger son, and they were hauling some of his sprouts from the basement of his house out to the driveway, and he drove me this, like, you know, very short, I think, like, you know, like less than a quarter of a mile out to his house, and immediately kind of launched into the entire principles of biointensive farming, and like how he got there. He was, I think, the kind of person that immediately greets you with every, you know, story he's
yeah
every story in his arsenal. So he brought me down into this basement sprouting room, which is kind of you know, is kind of a little spooky. It's they got had some lights, I think, overhead, and all these you know, various grains that he had soaked in water and then was letting dry on a paper towel until they sprouted, and then he would just try them individually.
Oh yeah, and he described to you how they tasted, right?
Yeah,
he was he like
they were pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He gave me a couple of garbanzo beans in there. They were pretty tasty. I've never had sprouted ones before, but they're really sweet. So,
oh. Was he talking the whole time?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I have my like notebook out and was just like scribbling. I wish I had it with me, but just scribbling the whole time and you know, could barely get a question in edgewise because he was just going from one topic to another.
But since the chemical invasion of the planet, the chances of the planet surviving, you know, are diminished somewhat.
He got mad and quit this, but he did start the farmer's market in Ledyard, which I think is still going strong. And,
yeah, it's a winter and summer.
Yeah, so...
I think you also mentioned in the story that he was working on getting an agricultural board up and running in Ledyard.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think I saw him at one meeting about that, and he was you know, there aren't a ton of farmers left in Ledyard, but he was still kind of fighting to get their interests, you know, heard. And he wasn't pleased with the speed of that getting introduced, but that was just the kind of guy he was. And,
yeah.
And he was fighting to get them heard.
Yeah.
I have 6 children. I have 18 grandchildren. And they're all rebels, and it's good because that's the problem with the world. There's not enough rebels in it.
Additional audio for that segment was provided to us by Reese Alvarez, who in 2012 shot a video featuring Robert Burns at his Ikey farm.